Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. On April 28, 2008, in Crawford v. Marion County, the court dismissed a constitutional challenge to an Indiana law requiring all voters who cast a ballot in person to present a photo ID issued by the United States or the state of Indiana. The court held that such a law does not unduly burden a citizen's right to vote. Hans von Spakovsky, former Federal Elections Committee commissioner, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. von Spakovsky.
This is Hans von Spakovsky. I'm a former member of the Federal Election Commission, and prior to that, I was a counsel to the Assistant Attorney General at the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, where I specialized in voting and election issues. On Monday, April 28th, the Supreme Court issued its decision in the case of Crawford v. Marion County Election Board. This is a case that arose out of the state of Indiana. In 2005, the Indiana legislature passed a photo voter ID law. This was partly in response to the Help America Vote Act, which had been passed in 2002. HAVA, as it is called, implemented the first national voter ID requirement, although limited. The HAVA statute required states to implement state laws that required any individual registering to vote by mail to, the first time they vote in a federal elections, provide a photo ID or a copy of a bank statement, utility bill, or other government document with their name and address on it. However, the HAVA statute made clear that this was a minimum requirement, and if states wanted to implement a stricter requirement, they were able to do so. Indiana legislature did exactly that. They passed a statute which requires for in-person voting a photo ID issued by Indiana or the United States. And that would, for example, include an unexpired driver's license, a student ID from an Indiana State College or university, a passport, or a military ID. Indiana also provided in the statute that it would supply a free ID to anyone who did not have an Indiana driver's license, while voters who were over the age of 65, who were disabled, or confined by illness or injury could cast an absentee ballot by mail without an ID. The Indiana Democratic Party filed suit against the photo ID law, along with a number of other organizations, such as the NAACP. The Federal District Court upheld the statute, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed that judgment, and the Supreme Court, in its decision, also affirmed the lower court judgments, finding that the Indiana voter ID law did not put a substantial burden on voters and therefore was not unconstitutional. The justices split 6-3 in their decision, with two decisions written by the prevailing justices. The first and lead decision was written by Justice Stevens and was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy. A second opinion was written by Justice Scalia and joined by Justices Thomas and Alito. Justice Souter wrote a dissenting opinion and was joined by Justice Ginsburg. And Justice Breyer wrote a separate dissenting opinion. All of the justices, however, did agree that strict scrutiny, which had been urged by the petitioners in this case, did not apply. Instead, a less restrictive balancing test that allows the state to present relevant and legitimate state interests to justify the burden that the voter ID law places on voters was applied by Justice Stevens, Chief Justice Roberts, and Justice Kennedy. In its decision, the court found that the state of Indiana's interest in deterring and detecting voter fraud is unquestionably relevant to protecting the integrity and reliability of the electoral process. The state's separate and independent interest in protecting public confidence in elections was also a significant interest of the state because such confidence encourages citizen participation in the democratic process. Justice Stevens acknowledged that the state did not present any evidence that impersonation fraud had occurred in the state of Indiana. However, Justice Stevens indicated that there have been many and flagrant examples of such fraud throughout the nation and throughout our history, and that has been documented by numerous respected historians and journalists, that there have been occasional examples of this in recent years, and that Indiana's own experience with fraudulent voting in the 2003 Democratic primary in East Chicago, in which the Indiana Supreme Court threw out the results of the mayor's race, demonstrated that not only is the risk of voter fraud real, but that it could affect the outcome of an election. This case has already been criticized by individuals saying that there are no recent cases of impersonation fraud around the country. However, those critics ignore the fact that, for example, in the city of New York in 1984, a grand jury report was made public by the district attorney in Brooklyn that detailed a 14-year successful voter fraud conspiracy in Brooklyn, which affected a number of both state legislative races and congressional Democratic primaries, that involved impersonation fraud at the polls and also individuals going into polls and voting in the names of individuals who were dead and who had moved out of the jurisdiction. Although this case was not mentioned by Justice Stevens in this particular case, information about this particular voter fraud case is available in a legal memorandum published by the Heritage Foundation entitled Stolen Identities, Stolen Votes, a Case Study in Voter Impersonation. Since Justice Stevens found that the purposes of the legislation were relevant and rational, he then turned to examining the burden imposed on voters in the requirement to obtain a photo ID. He noted that the Indiana legislature had provided that such IDs would be free, and he concluded that the inconvenience of gathering relevant documents, going to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, and posing for a photograph did not, quote, qualify as a substantial burden on the right to vote or even represent a significant increase over the usual burdens of voting. Another claim that had been raised by the petitioners was that this was a partisan law, since it had been passed only by Republicans, and that members of the Democratic Party in the legislature had all voted against it. That particular claim was also dismissed by Justice Stevens, who wrote that, quote, valid neutral justifications, close quote, for a non-discriminatory law won't be disregarded just because partisan interests may have provided one motivation for the votes of individual legislators. In a separate opinion for the majority written by Justice Scalia, the justice made an even stronger argument that the particular and specific burdens that might be imposed by this ID requirement on some voters was actually irrelevant. He wrote that the law should be upheld because its overall burden is minimal and justified. He also concluded that these ID requirements, which are universally applicable to voters in the state of Indiana, are eminently reasonable, and that the burden of acquiring, possessing, and showing a free photo ID is simply not severe and does not represent a significant increase over the usual burdens of voting. In his dissent, Justice Souter, joined by Justice Ginsburg, did find this law unconstitutional. Justice Souter also imposed a balancing test, and in his view, the non-trivial burdens on the voting right of tens of thousands of the state's citizens, to him, created a burden that would deter them from voting, and therefore it was unconstitutional. Now, Justice Souter did acknowledge the abstract importance of combating voter fraud, but he did not believe that this was the way to do so. Justice Breyer wrote a separate dissent in which he made clear that he did not believe that a voter ID law, such as that passed by Indiana, would automatically be found unconstitutional. In this particular case, however, he did find Indiana's law to be a substantial burden on voters and therefore unconstitutional. However, in an interesting part of his decision, he actually praised the voter ID laws that had been passed by Florida and the state of Georgia as significantly less restrictive laws. He seemed particularly impressed and spent part of the decision talking about the extensive education efforts that the state of Georgia put into effect to make sure that voters throughout the state were aware of Georgia's new voter ID requirement and that they knew how they could go about getting a free ID in order to satisfy those requirements. He did say that he was not determining and had no need to determine the constitutionality of those statutes. But it's very clear that he believed those particular statutes, because they were, in his view, less restrictive than the Indiana statute, were good examples of the kind of photo ID laws that states should implement if they want to implement these types of laws. The overall effect of this decision is that while it is a strong victory for proponents of voter ID, it is clear that more litigation will continue. I'm sure that a number of organizations will attempt to find plaintiffs, individual voters, who are affected by this law so that they can file as applied challenges in which they claim that the law as applied to a specific individual is such a burden that it must be found unconstitutional. One of the problems they will have, however, is demonstrated not just by the Indiana case, but also by the federal lawsuit that was filed against the state of Georgia over its photo ID law. In the Georgia case, Common Cause versus Billups, the final order in the case actually dismissed all claims, both constitutional and those under various voting rights statutes, and the judge there ruled that not only did the Georgia voter ID statute not violate any constitutional or statutory provisions, but that none of the organizations or even individual plaintiffs had standing to sue. The problem that the petitioners in the Indiana case and the plaintiffs in the Georgia case had was that in both cases, they were unable, after 2 years of litigation, to produce a single individual plaintiff who either did not have a photo ID or could not easily obtain one. This was strikingly set out in the Georgia case, where Judge Murphy, the federal district court judge, said that the failure to identify those individuals is particularly acute in light of the plaintiff's contention that a large number of Georgia voters lack acceptable photo ID. The fact that the plaintiffs, in spite of their efforts, have failed to uncover anyone who can attest to the fact that he or she will be prevented from voting provides significant support for a conclusion that the photo ID requirement does not unduly burden the right to vote. The very same problem surfaced in the Indiana case, with the Seventh Circuit noting that the petitioners were unable to produce a single Indiana resident who was affected by the law. As time goes on, these cases may also become more difficult because as elections are held, and some elections have already been held in Georgia and Indiana, the evidence from those elections probably will not help the cases. For example, in the state of Georgia, the state held its presidential preference primary in February with the new photo ID law in effect statewide for the first time. The turnout of voters was not only not affected and not diminished, but the state of Georgia had a record turnout in the primary. Almost 2 million voters turned out, which was about 1 million voters more than in 2004 when the photo ID requirement was not in effect. Further, the number of individuals in Georgia who were unable to vote because they did not have a photo ID out of the 2 million votes cast turned out to be 0.01% of the total votes. In Indiana, a study was done after the law went into effect of elections that were held there by Jeffrey Milo, a professor at the University of Missouri, And he found that the overall turnout went up by 2%, and when he did statistical analysis, looking at the turnout of particular voters in various racial, economic, and socioeconomic groups, that there was no effect of the voter photo ID requirement on those voters. This kind of data will no doubt make it even more difficult for organizations challenging these laws to sustain any as-applied challenges in the federal courts.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.